Last week marked the 100th anniversary of the death of Paul Laurence Dunbar. He was the first African-American poet to make his living through his writing. Dunbar's work influenced many black writers of the Harlem Renaissance, and he was well known during his lifetime for the poetry he wrote in black dialect. Those poems have caused some discomfort to black authors over the years. Independent producer Eileen LeBlanc has this profile of Dunbar's life and his work.
The Dunbar House on the west side of Dayton is today very much as it was when Paul Laurence Dunbar and his mother lived here. On the day he died in 1906, Dunbar lay on a daybed in front of the compact fireplace. The story goes that many people gathered here in the family room because word went out that Dunbar was gravely ill with tuberculosis and that he might recite one more time. Laverne Ski is the Dunbar House site manager.
In the arms of his mother, in the presence of his minister and his physician, he started reciting the 23rd Psalm. And when he got to the line, "Yea, though I walk through the valley and shadow of," his eyes closed on the word death.
He was 33 years old. He had written 4 novels, 4 books of short stories, 1 opera, 2 musicals, 4 plays, many essays, and 12 books of poetry. One of his best-known poems, A Negro Love Song, is performed here by Herbert Martin, poet in residence at the University of Dayton.
Seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. I held her hand and I squeezed it tight. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard a sigh, a little sigh. I seen a light gleam from her eye and a smile go flitting by. Hey, jump back, honey, jump back. I heard the wind blow through the pines. Jump back, honey, jump back. The mockingbird was a-singing fine. Jump back, honey, jump back. And my heart was beating so when I reached my lady's door that I couldn't bear to go. Jump back, honey, jump back. I put my arm around her waist. Oh, jump back, honey, jump back. I raised her lips and took a taste. Oh, jump back, honey, jump back. I love me, honey, love me true, love me well as I love you. And she answered, 'Cause I do. Jump back, honey, jump back.
This was the kind of language Dunbar grew up hearing. He was the son of 2 former slaves. And yet it is this very language from which many African Americans wanted to distance themselves because it tied them to the past. But Dunbar loved it and continued to write it in tandem with his standard English works, often hiding a second meaning in the poems. Professor Joanne Braxton of the College of William and Mary reads an excerpt from Dunbar's An Antebellum Sermon.
But when Moses with his power comes and sets us chillin' free, we will praise the gracious master that has given us liberty, and we'll shout our hallelujahs on that mighty reckoning day when we's recognized as citizens. Chillen, let us pray. He is deconstructing that stereotype, really, of the black minister who was preaching pie in the sky in a better day to come. He never considered the dialect poetry to be in any way inferior to his standard English poetry. Even humor, perhaps especially humor, is healing. And in this case, the lesson is taught that enslaved persons were not always submissive and that they were able to speak to multiple audiences at once.
In effect, Dunbar was presenting one face to white readers of the time while slipping in a message for his people. In another poem, he is more direct, using standard English to address what blacks have to do to get along in a white man's world. Dr. Herbert Martin recites the last portion of We Wear the Mask, published in 1895.
Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but O the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask.
Paul Lawrence Dunbar was the only African-American in his high school class, one he shared with Orville Wright. Soon after graduating, he talked the Wright brothers, who were printers then, into publishing the Dayton Tatler, a newspaper which Dunbar wrote for the black community. He wanted to go to law school, but he couldn't even get a job as a clerk, so he ended up operating an elevator in a downtown bank building. From his post, he took orders for his first book of poetry, Oak and Ivy. But by the time Dr. Joanne Braxton wanted to teach a course on Dunbar 25 years ago, virtually all of his books were out of print.
I was unable to find Dunbar poetry for my students. I was unable to buy books of Paul Lawrence Dunbar's poetry. The complete poems was completely out of print. And one day I'm standing over the Xerox machine, Xeroxing these poems, and I suddenly realize that the copyright is out of date.
So she edited The Collected Poetry of Paul Lawrence Dunbar, which was published in 1993. Since then, other books have come out, including two by Herbert Martin, one of Dunbar's poetry, and one focusing on essays, plays, and short stories. When Dunbar died, he was a popular writer with both whites and blacks. In the 1920s, a new generation of poets, including Langston Hughes and Sterling Brown, embraced the vernacular of their own time and place, urban America. Dunbar is buried in Woodlawn Cemetery in Dayton, just a few strides from the graves of the Wright brothers. A weeping willow grows nearby. Dr. Herbert Martin reads from the tombstone Dunbar's A Death Song, one of his dialect poems.
Lay me down beneath the willers in the grass, where the branch'll go a-singing as it pass, and when it's a-lying low, I can hear it as it go, singing, sleep, my honey, take your rest at last.
Martin says it's time that readers see the humanity in Paul Lawrence Dunbar's dialect poetry. Apparently, others agree with him. Next month, Stanford University hosts a 3-day conference on Dunbar. For NPR News, I'm Eileen LeBlanc.